Did you hear that?
BuyRaycon.com/RFR. That's BuyRaycon.com/RFR. Get 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. BuyRaycon.com/RFR. And we thank them so much for their support of us here at Rebel Force Radio.
Where the fun begins.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Star Wars number one.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Now it's time for Rebel Force Radio.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Oh yeah, shut, shut, everyone. Welcome back to Rebel Force Radio. After a little spring break, we are back here at the not-so-small Rebel base here. Grateful to be with you. Glad that you have chosen to be with us this week. We got a great show coming up. If you haven't heard, there's a whole new selection of classic, they're calling it vintage content, Star Wars content over at Disney Plus. We're going to break down some of that, and welcome back into the cantina the star of certainly the first Ewok adventure film, Caravan of Courage. The OM, he's back. The original Mace Tawani, Eric Walker, the actor, will be joining us to talk about his experiences on the set of those two films, as well as, what he thinks about them kind of getting a new life on Disney Plus. Plus, there's a new trailer for Bad Batch. We'll be breaking all that down and all kinds of fun things. And of course, I'm not here alone. With me, as always, my good friend and yours from Chicago, Jimmy Mack.
Hey, Jason. Hey, Star Wars fans. Going to be talking fast, going to be thinking fast, going to be working fast this week because we have so much stuff to get to. So, Jason, I'm going to be cracking the whip during this show. Oh. I'm going to make sure we stay on target.
Stay on target.
All right. We want to go into Bad Batch trailer?
Yeah. News headlines.
News headlines. Yeah. Let's do it.
Stay on target.
I have good news for you, my lord.
That's good news.
Come closer, I have good news.
Well, if you are anticipating the premiere of The Bad Batch, this is good news because there was a new trailer that dropped. Now, they're calling this a trailer. I don't recall what they called the previous. I think that might have been like a sneak peek or something like that. But this is the official, according to the Star Wars YouTube channel, this is the official Bad Batch trailer. Mm-hmm. Jim, as we always do, we're going to break it down scene by scene. We'll play it for the people here.
Okay.
And see what's going on with this trailer. Of course, the big debut is May 4th, appropriately enough, Star Wars Day, Disney Plus, The Bad Batch Season 1, Episode 1. But let's take a look at this trailer and see what we might be able to learn.
Yeah, it all seems pretty straightforward. I haven't I had really taken and broken it down frame by frame or anything like that, but let's just see what we got. Obviously, you know, right out of the gate, you're looking at Clone Wars level animation, which I think is
for
great.
Sure.
Because the Clone Wars is the best looking animated series of all time when it really finally hit its peak. At first, it was kind of wonky, you know, with the wooden marionette and the hair that didn't move, and it looked like everything was carved out of wood, and they were really going for that stylized Thunderbirds marionette look. And it wasn't until things started advancing, I think really the addition of Joel Aaron to the Clone Wars animation staff to supervise all the lighting and atmospheric details in the air. And I mean, you know, you could see dust flying around in his animation. It's so realistic. And so that's the type of, then, you know, it became just so good looking. So what a relief, especially after Star Wars Resistance, to see that Lucas Animation still has it, you know?
Yeah.
Because I was like, you know, Rebels to me didn't look half as good as Clone Wars. And then Resistance, forget about it. I mean, they had its moments, all right? But it was just too cartoony. This has the grit and grime of the Clone Wars.
It sure does.
Yeah.
And here's our merry band of mercenaries. So I think they're, my thought is they're going to become sort of mercenaries, but I think they're legit here as we're seeing it. And the voiceover is great Stephen Stanton doing his impeccable Grand Moff Tarkin, or Captain Tarkin, I think, still at this point.
We'll just call him Tarkin for the sake of brevity.
Yeah, we're not sure.
But I love seeing him on Kamino.
Yes!
That's just great. That's a great tie-in, a great bridge between the OT and the PT. Having Tarkin there is just fan. It's a great visual there. The way Jason just freeze framed this, you see Tarkin, he's standing on an observation platform with those Kaminoans.
Like, yeah, I was going to ask you, is this the first time we've seen the Kaminoans animated?
No, they were featured in Clone
Wars.
Were they? Yes, yes.
Okay.
But you can see that that's Tonwi, clearly, and the other one is Wing
Mama Sue?
Wing Dong or something. Oh, Mama Sue. Yeah, it's Mama Sue.
Lama Sue.
Mama Sue.
Llama.
Mama Sue.
Lama Sue.
And Lama Sue. It's they're both there.
This all right. So
more capable than an army.
Training sequence with battle droids. And those droids look familiar. There are these like floaty droids that just popped up out of the floor. There's something rings familiar about them with me. We must have seen them somewhere. Episode two.
Well,
Clone
we've seen this this training scenario before.
We have seen
in
the Clone Wars.
Wars,
and there's something very similar to it in the Jedi Fallen Order video game too.
Ah, but yeah, this whole exercise is ringing a bell. I remember it was when they had the. What was the battalion that was training, and they were learning how to gel together as a team, and it was a good arc in the Clone Wars.
Yeah, I know. I think you were talking about like the beginning of season three or something. I can't.
Yeah,
I need a rewatch.
I do too. See some.
What else you got?
Now there's five. There were four Bad Batch in the Clone Wars. Now there's five because Echo has joined the gang. We're a lot of action on Coruscant, it looks like. Battle droids. We can do better than that. Oh, look. He's got a knife. Who's that? You know, remember?
Let me back this up here.
Yeah.
He's bringing the knife.
He's got the blade. He had it in Clone Wars as well. I can't recall his name.
Yes.
But, you know, with the accent, I always think of, you know, that's not a knife. This is a knife. You know?
Crocodile
Dundee. Sorry.
And here we get our first glimpse.
The kid. Okay. This kid is a red flag to me. No.
As soon as this debuted, Jimmy Mack was on social media, on his social media channels, saying, uh-oh, I smell trouble.
We're doomed.
Red flag. Now, we knew that the Bad Batch was going to focus on this group perhaps rescuing a Jedi or a Padawan, or there was going to be a young... There was going to be a youngling involved, and we sort of just assumed that it was going to be Grogu.
Yeah, I thought for sure. I thought for sure. And then I thought, well, maybe it was Leia. But it just, now we get this kid. And this kid has Martez sisters written all over her. And I don't know. I don't know. So, but we'll see. We'll see. We can't condemn it. We have to watch it. This could be the coolest kid character in the history of entertainment. but I just hope that whoever the kid is, the identity ties into the big picture. It's not like we're just being introduced to some new kid for a spinoff for the kid. You know, I want it to be something very important to the future of Star Wars, or the big picture story.
Instead of My Five Dads.
No, or is this a clone? Is this kid a clone? That's what I'm wondering.
Well, it certainly doesn't look like one. I mean, well, doesn't have the dark hair.
A new type of clone from a new...
Or a new... Ah, okay. So perhaps from a new host. That's a possibility.
Because the clothing is clearly Kaminoan. By the cut in the neck, you see similar garb. Like, doesn't Daniel Logan wear that kind of stuff on Kamino? Yeah,
Daniel Logan. Oh, I don't know about Daniel Logan personally, but yes, when he is, when he's in the Clone Wars, yeah, there is that V cut around the neck. It's very reminiscent of that. But there's also some headgear that we're seeing here. So there's sort of like a headdress. So I'm less inclined to think that it's a clone. I think that there's the headdress is what's throwing me off. That doesn't seem to me to scream, you know, clone. I think this is maybe perhaps, I don't know, someone that happens to be on Kamino when some, you know what, hits the fan and Bad Batch ends up rescuing her. I don't know what to make of this. We'll see. Anyway. All right. So
you know who we are.
Hunter?
Let's go.
Yeah, so she clearly knows.
Tick.
Prepping to jump.
Who the Bad Batch are. You know, she's, oh, I know who you are.
So she has inside intel.
Right. Oh, like she's a fan.
Like she's
a
fan. I want Clone Force 99 found and wiped out.
All right, so something happens here.
Yes.
So, you know, at the beginning of this trailer, we see Tarkin, and he's talking about how great they are and their powers and their capabilities. And then something happens where he says, I want them wiped out. I want them taken out.
Mm-hmm. I'm speculating it's going to be, this is fallout from them not responding to Order 66. Because something in them genetically made them reject the programming chip that we know gets implanted in clones' heads, or they just never had that technology implemented into them. So that's what I think's going on. Failure to respond to Order 66 by the Bad Batch, and so Tarkin's bringing in the big guns to wipe them out.
Galaxy's a dangerous place to be.
Now, do we know who this is?
It's Fennec Shan. That
oh, it is.
Voiced by Ming-Na Wen.
Wow. Okay. So that's some nice tie-in right there.
Yeah.
Fennec Shan.
Yeah.
All right.
So we'll learn more about her backstory before she had mechanical guts.
Dangerous place to be.
We need to
Isn't that?
Was that? That is what this dragon-like character?
Oh, okay. At first, I thought it was Boga. Remember the Boga from...
That's what I was thinking from episode 2.
Yes.
Or, I'm sorry, Utapau. Episode 3.
Episode 3 from Utapau.
Yeah.
But no, that's some sort of like demon. I mean, that thing... You know what it reminds me of is when the sun, the Mortis sun, would transform itself into that gargoyle. It's kind of what it looks like. I'm not saying there's any connections there. It's just there's an aesthetic visual thing that makes me think of that. That's all.
We need to get out of here.
So Echo is like part Borg, part Lobot. He's clearly wearing, you know, they got him wearing the Lobot business.
I am Echo of Borg.
And who's the old little guy that they're? Oh no, that's the girl. All right, so they're escaping here.
Is that a girl? I can't even. I think it's a girl. I don't know.
Is it a girl? Oh God, I wouldn't want to.
Yeah, well, let's just move on.
Misgender her? I don't know.
We don't know. We haven't seen the episode yet.
How can I help?
The Clone Wars have ended.
Oh, now you see.
Yes.
Are they on Jakku? Maybe there, because look at all the wreckage. See, there's
a Star Destroyer. Perhaps not Jakku, but it could be Jeddah, maybe.
Or Jeddah. Interesting. Interesting.
Perhaps.
And so there you see that kid character. He's got something on the back. I don't know.
Yeah, backpack.
It almost looks like a musical instrument or something, like a stringed instrument. All right, so this analysis is going haywire. Okay, now is this Night Sister?
Okay, so this kid's weapon of choice is some sort of Star Wars version of a bow and arrow.
It looks like Night Sister weaponry, you know?
Oh, really?
Doesn't it with the bow that is laser bow? I'm just thinking that.
All right.
You can either adapt and survive.
Now that voice that we're hearing now is going to be revealed here shortly. Fennec Shan again. There we go. Saw Gerrera showing up here. So now
Scarred.
We're... Yes, so he's starting to... They're transitioning the character from the way he looked when he debuted on the Clone Wars to then what we're going to, or what we end up seeing in Rogue One and Rebels as well. So
yeah.
The evolution of Saw.
I have to admit, I watched this trailer when it was on, you know, maybe when it dropped, maybe on my phone, and everyone was raving about Saw Gerrera, and it wasn't until now that I actually realized that is Saw Gerrera. I was more looking for the Forrest Whitaker. That, to me, has become my Saw.
This is the connective tissue. This is what is going to connect. Because, you know, when Rogue One was coming out and we heard about the character and Saw Gerrera, and it was the character from the Clone Wars, and we saw the shots of Forrest Whitaker, we're like, oh, that's a bit of a stretch. You know, there was no resemblance at all. But I see what they're doing here. This is convincing me that this could be the same character. We know it is the same character, but visually they're creating some nice continuity here. So
it's getting a little closer. So yeah. We'll see.
We do.
Fennec Shan again.
We do what we do.
We do what we do.
So, that guy had a whip. He had like a laser whip. Did you see they were fighting?
Look at that.
Who is that? Does he look like a...
Boy, it's hard.
Oh, they make it hard for you to see who that is.
Boy, they do, but...
It's hard to make out.
Some sort of pirate or some sort of...
Right, right.
Pirate or raider.
Strap in, kid.
So their ship has that, it's got that Imperial shuttle look, you know, with the top wing and then the side wings.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember if we saw that ship in the final season of the Clone Wars when we were introduced to the Bad Batch or not, or if that's maybe something they stole.
Yeah.
But, you know, in Star Wars, of course, the vehicles sort of become characters of their own and sort of develop personalities. So I wonder if this is going to become associated with the Bad Batch, or if this is just temporary ride.
Strap in.
Maybe. So there's the Bad Batch. So we're looking forward to it.
I got to tell you, I'm struggling a little bit with this.
I know you are.
I want to be excited. I really do. And, you know, perhaps if this was 10 years ago, I would be doing cartwheels about it. But I got to say, you know, after two seasons of the Clone Wars and seeing the Book of Boba Fett teased in front of our eyes and the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, this feels like a step back in a way. I it doesn't feel like a step forward in Star Wars. And I'm also not over the moon about the kid.
Right.
You know, we were talking about those conventions, those tropes that they used in animation back in Saturday morning cartoons. And, you know, some of the shackles that were around guys like Paul Dini creating, you know, working on the Ewoks and Droids series, the notion of just giving a cute kid, you know, over to the, it feels very cliche to me to have the kid. And then it's like, oh, we got another kid like Ezra. Are we going to find out that there's force abilities? You know, my mind's going all over the place. I could have done without, and who knows? This could just be, maybe this is the first arc and the kid's going to go away. I don't know, but it is animation. We know how Disney feels about animation. It's generally reserved more for, you know, the broader family or the kids. So, you know, from the people who brought you Resistance.
Yeah. Comes, well, you know, it's,
I hope it's, I not think Resistance in Clone Wars, you know, decoration.
Right, right. Yeah, and Clone Wars clothing. But, yeah. You know, I think it looks quite promising. Like many, I was scratching my head when it was announced. Bad Batch, really? They're doing that? Out of all the things that they could create into an animated series, they're doing Bad Batch. But it could open up a lot of great possibilities, including animated Darth Vader. Yep. You know, that's what I'd like to see in the Clone Wars is some Darth Vader. Like Clone Wars era stuff. Or, you right. know, Clone Wars. Let me rephrase all that, because we know Darth Vader doesn't exist in the Clone Wars. I mean, in the quality of animation, that style. Right. I'd be very excited to see that. And just to see, you know, there's all kind of characters you can bring in. The Dark Times, that's what this is. Right. Always a very attractive era of Star Wars, to me, is the period between the PT and the OT. It's been largely unmined. Rebels did to a degree, but that was really something that sort of dovetailed into the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I like to explore maybe that first decade when Palpatine was in control. We know Kenobi's going to pick up 10 years after the fall of the Republic and the rise of the Empire.
Which is that sort of that halfway point between the PT and the OT. Jim, when you said the Dark Times, boy, wouldn't that be a great series?
Yeah.
Star Wars, The Dark Times.
The Dark Times. Dark Horse did a comic series called The Dark Times. It followed a Jedi on the run from Order 66, a guy named Daz Janir. And the first arc of that series is quite exceptional. Quite exceptional. And it ends. You have a sick feeling in your stomach when it's over. So it's quite effective. I recommend that. People who have the Marvel Unlimited app, Star Wars Dark Times, the first arc. I don't remember what it was called. They make it easy for you on the app to figure all that stuff out. Don't trust anything I say. I'll send you in the wrong direction.
All right. Well, so, yes, we'll be here, of course. Rebel Force Radio will be covering the build-up, and then once the Bad Batch starts, we'll be breaking it all down for you. So we're going to give it a shot. You know, again, just putting it into context with everything else that we're looking forward to coming at us as Star Wars fans, this is a little bit lower on my list in terms of excitement level, but hey, it's new Star Wars. I'm all in. And as you say, potential for appearances by Palpatine, by Vader. We know we're going to see Tarkin.
Thrawn.
Yep. Hey, speaking of Thrawn, you know, of course, Thrawn has been teased about in the Mandalorian, and questions are, well, who's going to play Thrawn? Could it be, what's his name? Mikkelsen. I always, you know, his brother is Mads Mikkelsen. Lashif from Casino Royale. I forget his brother's name.
Lars.
His first name. Lars Mikkelsen. Yes, Lars Mikkelsen. Could it be him? A lot of speculation about Benedict Cumberbatch, though.
Yes.
John, people are saying that. Why not him?
Well, of course, you know, the fans throw that stuff around. And it's called fan casting. Very popular amongst social media, especially with people like Rosario Dawson, who is essentially fan casted into the role of Ahsoka. And attempts have been made to fan cast Benedict Cumberbatch. Even people are taking pictures of him, painting it blue, painting his skin blue, giving him the red eyes. Look how much he looks like Thrawn. So it gets around. It gets around. Yeah. And Cumberbatch is out. He's doing press for some reason. He's shooting the new Doctor Strange. So he's taking a break from that, and he sits down and talks to the guys from Collider. And they throw that Thrawn idea at him. I think they even go as far as calling it a rumor. But it's really not a rumor. It's just stuff the fans start spreading. That's how things work now, apparently. So if you talk about it enough, it becomes a rumor. So here's Benedict Cumberbatch responding to questions about whether or not he'd play Thrawn in The Mandalorian.
Grand Admiral Thrawn. Does he turn into Peter Cushing or something? Is that?
No, he's blue.
That's a straight no for me right now. I there's no way I want to be turned blue. I could turn the air blue very, very recently, but no, seriously, I precious time with my children, and I think sitting in a makeup chair being painted blue and the amount of time it would take to do that and then take it off at the end of the day might just, it's not the right time in my life for that.
No blue.
So that's it.
All right.
So Cumberbatch, he's turning the role down before it's even been offered to him because it's going to involve just a little bit too much time in the makeup chair.
Right. So we know now this answers a whole bunch of questions. Will Benedict Cumberbatch be in Avatar? No. Blue people. Will Benedict Cumberbatch be in Blue Man Group? Is he going to shave his head? No, that will never, ever happen because he doesn't fancy sitting in the makeup chair, and it's not time in his life for that kind of business.
Oh, not with those kids.
But, you know, with the way special effects technology is working now, they could just put you in front of a camera and make your face any color they want to. So, you know, but of course you want to go for realism on the set. And but that's a set that Benedict Cumberbatch will not be on. He will not be playing Thrawn in The Mandalorian. But again, he could just be blowing smoke and trying to throw everyone off the scent. And the next thing you know, possibly we'll see him looking bluer than
Papa Smurf.
It's Papa Smurf's turd. You know,
you know. I would love to see Lars Mikkelsen do it. Let's let somebody, because. You know, with the, like you say, with the technology that they have, they can pretty much do anything. But I don't need him to necessarily look, you know, kind of have that sort of chiseled look that he was established in the animation. I mean, as long as the performance is there, who cares? But I've seen some mock-ups online of Lars Mikkelsen as a live action Thrawn. I'm all for it. I always loved his voice. That's one thing I loved about the Thrawn character in Rebels was the voice. But he did become, Jim, for me, you know, the thing that Dave Filoni always said he wanted to avoid with Darth Vader, which was the, you know, at the end of every episode, shaking his fist at the heavens.
Yes.
You know, I'll get you next time, Rebels. You know, or my favorite was, you know, his plan would just blow up in his face, and he'd be like, yes, just as I predicted.
Yeah, right.
All according to plan.
Everything, yeah. No matter what happened, you know. Sir, the rebels have raided our headquarters, and they've taken the women and children hostage, including your wife.
All according to plan. Just as I had foreseen.
Well, I'm glad you foresaw it, but it's happening, man. We got to do something about it. They're taking our beer.
Just as I planned.
What do you mean? You planned for them to take our beer? All right, moving on. More fan casting.
More fan casting. You know, you don't get bigger fan casting these days than the Sebastian Stan as Luke Skywalker. Now, no, I can't give... categorically credit to Paul Bateman, but Paul was the first one that brought Sebastian Stan to my radar as a potential stand-in for Luke Skywalker. But I think that was circulating prior to that. There's a very famous sort of mashup, Jim, of a publicity photo of Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker from Empire Strikes Back, where they morphed in the face of Sebastian Stan, and of course everybody went crazy. Everybody, meaning the internet, went crazy.
Right. Yes, it caused a lot of buzz.
It did. It certainly did. And then once we saw Luke Skywalker show up on The Mandalorian in the de-aged face of Mark Hamill, people said, "Oh, you know, you could have done better with Sebastian Stan." There are, you know, there are fan edits and all this stuff. So Sebastian Stan, Sebastian Stan, Sebastian Stan, and the question I was been asking myself, well, has anybody talked to Sebastian Stan? What does he think about this, about him becoming Luke Skywalker? Well, finally somebody did, right?
Yeah, he appeared on Good Morning America recently because he's promoting Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And so, you know, the lines between these Disney-owned franchises are all becoming super thin now, you know? If somebody has a connection with Marvel, that immediately makes them a candidate to do something with Star Wars.
All in the family, they say.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like we're living in the golden age of the nerd right now, big time. So, and of course, you know, the fan casting again. You put the hair on Sebastian Stan, and all of a sudden, oh my God, he looks just like Mark Hamill. So they ask him on Good Morning America about the buzz, about it, you know, slash rumor, as Good Morning America put in their tweet about this to promote this clip at GMA on Twitter. Sebastian Stan on rumors of him playing a young Luke Skywalker. Now, keep in mind, Good Morning America, ABC Television, Disney Company. What's going on here? So, because a fan put out a picture of Sebastian Stan with Mark Hamill's mop top from 1975, now all of a sudden, a Disney-owned production is tweeting out that Sebastian Stan rumors of him playing a young Luke Skywalker. You know, it's kind of funny how the tail wags the dog, and that's what we're seeing here, folks. And sometimes I can't help but wonder if this stuff is all just planted. It's not legitimate internet natural hype, you know, but it's all manufactured and orchestrated. I don't know what to believe in the age of social media now, but let's just play along and listen to this clip of Sebastian talking about the now rumor of him playing young Luke Skywalker.
People are wondering about you playing perhaps a young Luke Skywalker. Ooh. I know he's going from Marvel to Disney and to Star Wars, and even Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker himself, has tweeted his support.
Well, if Mark Hamill calls me personally to tell me that he feels inclined to share this role with me, then I'll believe it. Until then, I won't believe it.
See you again.
Well, Mark Hamill, of no stranger to Twitter, tweeted, "Sorry to disappoint you, but I refuse to say, Sebastian Stan, I am your father. Even though, in fact, I am. Hashtag sorry, not sorry. Hashtag my son, Sebastian." Mm. There is, Jim, as we're looking at this on the screen here, for those watching the episode tonight, there is a resemblance. There is an uncanny resemblance between the two at certain angles. And it doesn't take much of a stretch of the imagination to see him as a Luke Skywalker in the original trilogy era.
Yeah. Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. And in the right hands, that could really be amazing to see a young Luke Skywalker return, like, you know, for like a movie or something, played by Sebastian Stan. But I said in the right hands, you see. So I'll just leave that where it is. And
leave it right.
I'm just going to leave it hanging out there. So that's interesting. That's interesting. I mean, Mark has not fully like endorsed this at all. You know, I mean, you read the tweet. It was just like Mark himself is seeing the similarities, you know, so he's just playing along, but he's not like, oh, by the way, I'm giving up my role of Luke Skywalker to you after they finally figured out how to de-age me. You know, no way, no way. Hamill's going to be around for the next decade. Trust me on that. You know, looking young and perfect.
Right.
So, so speaking of young and perfect.
Yes.
Let's talk about Liam Neeson, who's neither of which, but he's a great guy. I love Liam.
And one of our favorites here on Rebel Force Radio.
Of course, you know. He's a good Irishman and a venerable Jedi Knight. And he popped by the Graham Norton show. For what reason, I don't know. I only caught this one clip. It was Liam and his son, Michael. And they were sharing a story about Michael, as an infant, being on the set of The Phantom Menace. Maybe not. Maybe he was a toddler, not an infant. But he was on the set of The Phantom Menace. And it's a fun, kind of cute story that Liam shares on The Graham Norton Show.
He's making Star Wars, The Phantom Menace, and Leavesden Studios about 23 years ago. And it was at lunchtime, and Michael was two. So I was carrying him, showing him the set at lunchtime, and R2-D2 was parked up against wherever. And I was carrying Michael around and pointing things out, and he saw R2-D2. Now, he knew nothing about Star Wars or saw any movies or comics or anything like that. He's two. But he saw this little metallic creature, and he was like this. I had to get down from my arms, waddled over to this thing and started hugging it, which I thought was fascinating. And I remember after lunch, I told George Lucas, I said, George, I brought my son to see, he had to go down and go over to R2-D2 and just hug him. And George wasn't surprised. He had a smile on his face and he says, yeah, he has that effect on children. Aww. I says, but my kid is 2 years of age. And, it's a big chunk of metal. he just knew it was cuddly and comfortable and friendly, you know?
why is Liam always the last to understand anything related to Star Wars? He's always dismayed by it. Where has he been for the last 40 some years, you know? Yeah. Oh, it's so popular, yeah, you know? It just surprises me. Kids love it. He's I have no bemused. Idea.
He's always like, bemused.
He's bemused. He's like, oh yeah, you know, I saw the little guy over there, and he comes up this mechanical creature. I had never seen anything like it before. And my son, he just jumped right out of my arms. He must have taken a 4-foot fall there. It landed right there in the Tatooine sand, and he waddled over to the metallic creature and just started hugging it, and he was just rubbing up against the thing. I said, George, you know. And then George, he waddled over, you know, because George, you know. And I said, George, look at this, you know. He loves the mechanical thing. The kid is 2 years old. He doesn't know his head from his own arse. And look at him. He's hugging
on a chunk of metal.
And George says, yeah, sure, you know, because he's cuddly and comfortable and friendly, you know, and he's cuddly and friendly and cuddly. And I said, well, I'll be darned, you know, he sure is. So I went over there, I straddled the thing, and I started just riding around the Tatooine desert there on R2. You should have seen it. I was in my full Jedi robes. It was quite fascinating, you know. I don't know. They must have put it on one of those DVDs. You should look for it. But, you know, I agree. It was cuddly and comfortable and friendly and cuddly and friendly and friendly. I found, like, I guess I get it now, you know, George. And George, he had waddled away at this point, and I don't even know where my two-year-old is at this point. He's out there alone on the Tatooine desert. You know, it's Tunisia. It's hotter than hell out there, man. Oh, yeah, sure, you know. They love it. It's cuddly.
Star Wars.
It's cuddly.
Through the eyes of Liam Neeson is...
friendly. It's comfortable and cuddly, you know. And friendly. Did I say friendly?
He's the last one to get the memo that Star Wars is a big deal. It just always cracks me up. Hey, you know, we lost a big deal, actually. A iconic voiceover... artist, and he was the voice of many, many Disney movie trailers, passed away at the ripe old age of 81. Mark Elliott, who, you know, once you hear his voice, you go, oh, that guy.
Yeah, right. He was like the original In a World, but not really. He had much more of a, he was more of a kind of a more friendly tone, you know, more of a tone of hospitality. And he was a great DJ, Hollywood DJ, voiceover artist, and he was heard on just so many promos and movie trailers during the 70s through the 90s. Warm and comforting Midwestern tone, Jason, which is kind of like your hosts on Rebel Force Radio, the warm and comforting and friendly and cuddly and
comfortable and cute and friendly and cuddly, you know, and friendly. So, but yeah, he did all kind of stuff, promos for Chariots of Fire, Smoking the Bandit, The Goodbye Girl, and of course, What Brings You to This Show Every Week. He voiced the original radio spots for Star Wars. So wow. for some of us, this was our first ever exposure to Star Wars, was via the original radio commercials. And there's several of them. You can find them on YouTube and stuff. But I just pulled this one because they're kind of, there's a real mid-70s awkward vibe to them. that makes them so much fun to revisit. So here's Mark Elliott, the late great voiceover artist Mark Elliott, who passed away recently at age 81. Here he is voicing the original Star Wars radio spot from 1977.
Don't be alarmed. It's only a laser sword fight. Don't be scared. It's only the Death Star destroying another world. Relax. It's only a movie, and it's all for fun. Director George Lucas and 20th Century Fox present Star Wars. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
He's very robotic there at the end, yeah.
You know, that's another one of those things that I forgot that I remembered, those radio spots. Because now I recall the, don't be alarmed. That's just a Star Destroyer.
Right. That, you know,
it's such a weird ad campaign, you know, being in marketing, I think to myself, like, that's a weird direction to go, you know,
and note,
that's just a laser fight.
Note the usage of the term laser sword.
Right.
And, you know, we've heard that a lot of times over the years. That was George Lucas's original name for the lightsaber, but with something that's so new and fresh, the term lightsaber isn't
right.
It wasn't as pedestrian of a term as it is now. You know, you take that for granted. Nobody knew what a lightsaber was, so you put it into the spot. A laser sword conjures up an image.
Yes, but what's so amazing is that laser sword now seems like this antiquated, unnecessary description, because lightsaber has become such a part of pop culture. Mm-hmm. That you don't need that overly descriptive term laser sword, because we all know what a lightsaber is.
Yeah, but in the Star Wars universe, I don't think they do, because young Anakin, when he spots Liam Neeson's lightsaber, he's like, I saw your laser sword. He's like, oh, yeah, sure, you know, I got the one of those. We call him a lightsaber, kid. A lightsaber. Hey, where's that little mechanical creature at? Where's he bugging around? I'm going to hop on him and go for another ride, you know? It's a lot of fun. Okay. He's cuddly and cute and friendly. Cuddly. Yeah, and friendly. Did I say friendly?
And friendly. Oh.
But, yeah, he says laser sword. And then, you know,
right.
Hamill was derided for, Hamill for his, you know, he didn't write the dialogue. Ryan Johnson did. But he's like, what do you want me to do? March out there with my laser sword? I was like, what? Why is he calling it a laser sword? But that was just kind of, I think, you know, like common universe vernacular. You know, that's just what people said. It was not uncommon.
When Johnson wrote that for Luke Skywalker to say, the implication there when he calls it a laser sword, he drills it down to its basics. You know, lightsaber is its hallowed name. The lightsaber, it is the weapon of a Jedi Knight. Yeah. So Luke is taking all of the mysticism and the specialness out of it. He just drills it down into its basic element, which is just, you want me to walk out there with my laser sword? It's almost a disdainful kind of dismissive way of describing it. You know, Mark Johnson, Ryan Johnson.
Well, you know, it's a disdainful comment made, you know, it's consistent with a guy who's going to take it and throw it over his shoulder. You know?
Sure.
Right. So, you know, which hurts as well. But I mean, you know, that's that. And so Laser Sword in the original Star Wars radio spot. I just thought that was kind of a curiosity. And Mark Elliott's rest in peace. Iconic voice of Disney movie trailers and beyond. So great career, and rest in peace, as I said.
Yeah. Hello, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to Rebel Force Radio, your source for the Force.
I don't know about you, but these days I feel like I'm always looking at a screen. I mean, now more than ever. And whether you're an avid news watcher or just in need of a distraction, unplugging yourself is a lot easier said than done. And one of my favorite ways is to rest my eyes and still get the content that I'm itching for. Content like Rebel Force Radio. And I do it by putting in my Raycon wireless earbuds and listening to something great. Like I said, Rebel Force Radio or, you know, my favorite Sinatra record. But whether you're catching up on your favorite news podcast, binging an audiobook, or just powering through your workout with a pumped up playlist, a pair of Raycons in your ears can make all the difference. I often use Raycons when I'm recording this podcast. I use them exclusively when I'm in the car and need to catch up with some phone calls. And the great thing about the Raycons is there's no weird wires or those stems coming, you know, out of your ears. They're stylish. They come in a wide range of colors, and they're always comfortable in the ear and very discreet. They're built to perform anywhere and anytime with water and sweat resistant construction and Bluetooth that pairs quickly and seamlessly. And you get enough battery life for 6 hours of playtime. That allows you to unplug for a little while. And the best part, of course, is that Raycon makes great sound accessible to everyone with wireless earbuds starting at half the price of the other premium audio brands. And right now, Raycon is offering 15% off of all their products for Rebel Force Radio listeners. And here's what you got to do. Go to buyraycon.com/RFR. That's it. You'll get 15% off your entire Raycon order. So feel free to grab a pair and a spare, or pick one up for that special friend. 15% off at buyraycon.com/RFR. buyraycon.com/RFR. And we thank them so much for their support of us here at Rebel Force Radio.
Star Wars, Star Wars Cantina.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
All right, as promised, we got him in the cantina. The OM, the original Mace, Eric Walker, joining us. So good to see you. It has been a while.
It sure has, guys. Thank you for having me on. Hey, the OM is in the house, as you guys coined the phrase.
OM, original Mace.
Sorry, Sam. Sorry, Sam Jackson.
So I think we haven't talked for like 11 years. I remember saying to you back in, I think it was 2010, I said, we'll get you back on a show as soon as these Ewok movies start streaming. And we didn't even know what streaming was back then.
But
here we are. And you made it to Disney Plus. And how great is that? That these Ewok movies, they've been elusive for a lot of the fan base for many years, seeing only limited release over, and it hasn't been published for years now or made available for years. And so now a whole new generation is able to see these Ewok movies finally.
I think that's great. I'm sad that it took too long to get them to release, because the prices started going higher and higher and higher. Before you knew it, it was almost over $100 just to get the out-of-print DVDs. And that not even on Blu-ray. So they're on regular DVD.
Yeah, but these versions that we're streaming on Disney Plus are in HD, if not 4K. I've been watching them. Strangely, the best screen that I have is my iPhone 12 Pro. It's an amazing screen. It beats my television. And as I was watching the films today, I was actually texting Jim saying these things look incredible. I mean, they look like they were shot yesterday. So they were clearly not skimping on, you know, the film stock that they were using to capture these. And the negatives obviously were in great shape, because they were obviously scanned really well. But yeah, I mean, I would imagine that it's pretty exciting for you for these to get new life. I mean, streaming has, you know, especially for Star Wars, whether it be the Clone Wars and now the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars series, it creates a whole new fan base.
It does, and you're right. They did a great job scanning them, and they look great in HD, and they look better than I remembered. You know, back in the day, we saw that on regular television, so it was very different. We didn't even have HD back in the 80s. So if you were in America or Canada, they were on television. So we lost out. The fan base here lost out. But everywhere else, it was in the movie theaters. It was actually a release like Star Wars, and most of my fan base is overseas. They know the Ewok movies and love them overseas. I get invited to conventions all the time over in Germany and England and overseas in France and Italy. But here, you know, they were on television. So we lost out. And I was lucky enough that I did, because they had cast and crew screenings and screenings to show the press. So I did get to see them in the movie theaters. So I was lucky enough to see a higher quality version. And you're right, they shot them on 35mm film. For any film buffs out there, the Caravan of Courage was shot using Aeroflex cameras. And the second movie, Ewok's A Battle for Endor, they brought in Panavision, so that one even looks better than the first one.
It appears the budget for the second one was a little bit bigger. There are more interior sets, whereas I think Caravan for Courage was largely shot outside. Did you guys shoot that in Marin? Is that where that was shot?
Well, it was shot all around San Rafael. Back in the day, Lucasfilm and ILM, they were in the city of San Rafael. They were on Kerner Avenue, if anybody knows that area. And they had a main stage. The ILM main stage had the largest blue screen in the world there. And we shot in the main stage for all the blue screen stuff with the Gorax and other stuff that they needed the blue screen for. Then we also used Cookie Bay, which is a smaller sound stage there as well. And so we shot at ILM for, I want to say, probably not too long. You're right. Most of it was outdoors. We probably only shot for a couple weeks on the soundstage. The rest of it was location. Yeah.
Go ahead. You were at a place in that warehouse, the ILM warehouse, where a lot of legendary things went down.
That is for sure.
Yeah.
Even when we were making the movie. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, it was a former home of Kerner Optical, and they'd even changed the door. They didn't switch it out because they didn't want to attract a lot of attention with, you know,
that's right,
industrial light and magic. You know,
that's right.
Star Wars made
hidden
here.
It was hidden.
And since they've moved ILM to downtown San Francisco in the Presidio, they took the door with them, the Kerner Optical, and it's hanging in the hallways of
Lucasfilm.
That's
great. That's great.
So I think a lot of people, when they pass by it, they always grab at the handle to try to get some of the mojo off of all the incredible creative talent that had grabbed that handle over the years, including yourself, Eric Walker.
Oh, thank you. That, guys, I'm humbled. But it was, you're right, the stuff that was going on when we were up there at ILM, and I was able to see what was going on at the time. I remember we were on the main stage, and Ron Howard was over on Cookie Bay doing test shots for Cocoon. So they said, "Do you want to meet Ron Howard?" And are you kidding me? That's my, you know, from Happy Days, Ron Howard. Of course, I want to meet Ron Howard. And then I went over and met him, and he was gracious enough to take a picture. And he said, "You know, I heard from George, you're doing a really great job, and you know, keep up the good work." And I'm thinking, what? He's complimenting me. So it was like freaking me out, but I tried to you know, keep my composure and act professional. And they were doing test shots for Cocoon, I guess the alien, to see they had them in these costumes or whatever. They were just doing test shots for special effects stuff, which was neat.
Eric, take us back a little bit, because I'm guessing from looking at you in the film, you were 12, 13 maybe, when you did it?
No, I was older. I just looked younger.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually turned 51 this year, so I was 14 when I did the Ewok movie,
okay,
and
so
I was 15. That's why I remember it so much. Yeah, that's well. The script said Mace was like 9 or 10 or something like that, if I remember correctly. So Mace was supposed to be younger. I don't know if I would pass for a 9 or 10, but maybe 11 or 12.
Certainly, yeah, 11 or 12. But so I'm just trying to put myself into, you know, your head at the time. We're talking about 1984, I'm guessing, right? In that in that area, as a young teenager, clearly you would have been caught up in, you know, the phenomenon that is Star Wars. And you get this opportunity. I know that Lucasfilm has always been famously tight-lipped. Did you know when you were auditioning or you were going out for this that it was a Star Wars project, or did you just think it was, you know, movie of the week? What did you know going into this?
Well, going into it, I did not know that it was for a Lucasfilm or George Lucas was involved in it. In fact, the original call for the audition, my agent said, I have a same-day audition for, she called my dad, I have a same-day audition for Eric. He needs to, it's for a one-hour after-school special. And he's dressed, and have him dressed like a bully. He's supposed to be this mean, tough type of character. So, but you don't have to go by and pick up sides, and sides are the script. That's what they call sides. Yeah. You don't have to go pick up the sides. It's just going to be a general interview. He's going to meet with the director and producer to see if he's right for the role. So I went there, and it was at the Egg Factory, which at that time, the Egg Factory was a building that was across the street from Universal Studios on Lancashire Boulevard. It right now, it's a subway station, I believe, so they tore it down. But it's right there across the street from Universal Studios. And I heard that was kind of Lucasfilm's headquarters down here in L.A. I don't know how much of that is true. You hear stories. And I went there and I met with John Cordy and Tom Smith, and they liked me. And they said, you know, the executive producer's not here. He can't. Do you mind if we get you on camera? And we're going to give you sides, the script. And can you go with your dad and study them for a little bit and then come back in? We'll get you on camera so the executive producer could see you. And at that time, I was very serious about my acting craft. I was studying in acting workshops. I had acting class on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. So I was that serious. And I had learned a monologue to be prepared as an actor. And I said, on one condition, since you're not giving me enough time to really learn this, and I couldn't get the sides earlier, let me do my monologue that I prepared so you get that too. And they go, okay, yeah, we'll get the monologue as well. So, yeah, and then I went outside, worked on a script for 10 or 15 minutes, and the script didn't say, it did say Mace, but it didn't say Ewoks or any of that stuff, and it was a couple lines. I don't remember what the scene was, but it didn't give it away. And I came in, I did it, and then I did my monologue, and I thought I did a pretty good job. I thought I nailed it on the monologue. And they said, but they of course said, you did a very good job. We'll be in touch with you, let you know. And then about 2 weeks later, I got a call. They wanted me to do a screen test with Aubrey Miller up in Mill Valley at Cordy Films. And they said, go up there, and they were paying us. It was a screen test. You got paid, whatever the SAG scale was. I got flown up there, and we rent. Then I saw, the first time I saw Ewok in the script, and I knew what it was. Of course I did, because I saw Return of the Jedi about a dozen times in 83, the summer before. So I said, I wonder if this is part of Star Wars. and then so we still... keeping my composure, we filmed scenes all day, and Aubrey Miller was very young at the age. She was only 4. So they were concerned that she might be afraid of an Ewok. So they said, we're gonna bring an Ewok out and show it to her and see if she's scared. So they brought an Ewok out on a stick, and she ran up there and hugged it, and it looked like a teddy bear. And she loved it, thought it was great, and... you know, Ewok on a stick. I think some stormtroopers might like that. But
yeah, Ewok walks in and she, Aubrey, just lets loose with this blood-curdling scream because we know she can do that.
We know,
at the very end of the movie. At the very end of the movie.
Yes.
She that big giant comes crawling out of the abyss, and she yells. I mean, what a scream! The only thing is
that's not projects. Her voice. That's not her voice in the first movie. That was dubbed by another actress. The second movie is Aubrey Miller's voice. She was too young to do the ADR,
really?
So they tried let her try it, but she couldn't do it.
Oh my!
On the first one.
Wow.
So the first
that's
one
amazing.
And the little girl who did her voice, I met her because I came in to do the ADR after she finished, and she wanted to meet me. Mm-hmm. And her name was Tiffany Brissett, who later went on to do Small Wonder. She was the robot in Small Wonder.
No kidding.
Oh, of course, yes.
Small Wonder, Friday nights.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's the voice of
Sindel. And Caravan of Courage.
And so Sindel... Aubrey Miller, have you been able to keep in touch with her? Now, I remember you telling us a long time ago you guys did a horror convention in Cleveland or somewhere in Ohio, and she just completely didn't remember anything about her experience.
She just felt bad all week long. She sat there and they kept asking her questions over and over, and it was like, you know, get me out of here, you know. And I think she showed up because she wanted to see me again because we hadn't seen each other as adults.
And
she had remembered. I mean, we kept in touch for years after the Ewok movies. In fact, I went up there and had vacations up there. She came down south here and had vacations here. So we were in touch with each other for 3 or 4 years after the Ewok movies. But then we kind of lost touch. And I think she just missed me and had remembered me a little bit because I was a part of her life a little bit longer than those movies. So she had, and I was like a bigger brother to her, so she wanted to see me again. But you're right; she doesn't remember the movies. I am in touch with her. We still email each other probably 2 or 3 times a year. I've tried to get her to do other conventions, guys. I hate to tell you guys, she says I feel bad. I keep turning you down, but I just don't want to do them. And I think that's why. And at one moment she did entertain doing a private signing, but the last then I asked her to do that a few months ago, and she said no to that even. So
maybe with this, you know, greater accessibility to these movies now, I'm sure a whole new fan base will be generated around these films, and maybe that will inspire her a little bit to, you know, share a little of her personality with us Star Wars fans because she is Sindel. And you can never take that away from her.
And ironically, she ended up in the entertainment industry. She's a producer. She produces commercials. She got her degree in, she went to Chico State, and her degree is in broadcasting, or I believe. So she works for a company up in Northern California where she produces commercials. And for a time, she actually was a producer on some local television station as well, news station.
Now, Eric, you're coming to us from what looks like your home office / studio. You have a keyboard there. We know you're a musician.
Yes.
Sindel sings a cute little song in the middle of Battle for Endor. And I think it needs to be put to music. And I think you're the man to do it.
Okay.
So maybe I'll send you the audio file.
Send it.
And you can lay down some keyboard accompaniment. Therefore, you can perform with Aubrey once
That's
more.
That's a good idea. That's
you know,
a good
maybe
idea.
She won't come out for the autograph signings, but we have the recording of the song.
Let's do it. why not? I mean, last year I did a version of the Mandalorian theme, my own version of the Mandalorian theme.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll have to play that.
I'll send it to you guys, yeah.
You're obviously a big Star Wars fan. I can see in the background you have tons of memorabilia. It looks like a whole collection of Black Series and what else you got back there? You have everything.
Yeah, I went to Galaxy's Edge and I got like 4 different lightsabers that I built there, and I have Darth Maul's lightsabers as well and some other ones.
A blast to build those sabers there at Savvy's Workshop. I think
it was. I'm missing it. I have a website called All for Sci-Fi, which is similar to it's about all about sci-fi, not just Star Wars. Because I was thinking there's a big void out there. I mean, there's niches like you got Rebel Force Radio with you guys, and then they have Star Trek has their own podcast, and Babylon 5's Stargate has their own. but nobody has all of sci-fi. So I created All for Sci-Fi, and that's another reason why I've been to all those to cover that for All for Sci-Fi.
And what do you do on that? Is it like a lot of unboxings and reviews and things like that?
Yep, that and also reviews of, you know, The Mandalorian. We talk about, you know, we just did a review of Godzilla versus King Kong the other week. So it's a lot of that. And every week, if you just watch our webcast that's on every Saturday, we give away a free action figure, like a trivia thing. If you watch All for Sci-Fi, you'll get that. You could win a free figure every week, which is pretty cool.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. So what do you think of The Mandalorian? I mean, obviously we want to direct people to your website to hear your reviews, but just give us some of your thoughts about the first two seasons and the return of Luke Skywalker in the season two finale.
Oh, I was just over the moon. And all season long, as I was reviewing The Mandalorian, I kept telling people, even back at the beginning, that's going to be Luke Skywalker. That's going to be Luke Skywalker the whole time. I didn't have any inside information, but I just felt it, that it was going to be Luke.
Felt a tremor in the Force.
Yes. Use the Force. Yeah. So, yeah, Mandalorian is awesome. It is old school. You got two guys here that Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau, who, by the way, say that they got some inspiration from Caravan of Courage and Ewok movies. They took the blurgs and put them into Mandalorian.
Yes.
So so anytime you guys need any inspiration and want me to play a small part, give me a call if you ever hear the Rebel Force Radio. I would love. By the way, Mace does live, everybody says. So who knows? Maybe you could change things up.
Well, maybe he can appear in The Mandalorian as a Force ghost or something like that. He can guide Baby Yoda.
I would love. I would love to just be, in some sort of makeup. They don't even need to see what I look like. I don't mind being a bounty hunter. I don't mind being in a stormtrooper. It doesn't matter. I'm a big Star Wars fan. But the reason why I'm bringing all that up is not to plug myself for them to put me in The Mandalorian. But the reason why I'm bringing that up is because. Thank you, because these are true Star Wars fans. They love Star Wars. To try to create the magic that came from the original Star Wars, that's why it's so successful, because you got people that are fans that care about these characters. That's why The Mandalorian is so awesome. And I believe it got 5-star ratings on, I want to say, over half the season. I gave it 5 stars.
Nice.
So it's a great show.
Now, obviously, I say you have to appear as a Force ghost in The Mandalorian because Mace does not live past the first 6 minutes of Battle for Endor. We've talked about that before.
What happened if his life monitor got blown up? Maybe he is alive. What if his hand got damaged?
We didn't actually see the body.
There was no body.
That's true.
Right. That's right. What if he just is damaged and then he spent the next however many years trying to find Sindel? I mean, there's an interesting story too, trying to get off the planet. Oh, so, and then you could have bring the Ewoks back. I mean, you could do all kinds of really great things and be creative about it for sure.
Was there ever any discussion that you're aware of that these made-for-TV movies could possibly be pilots for series?
Well, ABC...
Or was it just one-and-done kind of thing?
No, ABC pitched George... I know this because I heard it. They wanted this to be a television series, The Ewok Adventures. But George didn't want to do that. He was making these movies for Amanda Lucas. To me, these movies were made out of love for his daughter. That's why probably they're so hidden, is because these were gifts to his daughter who loved the Ewok movies. Not the Ewok movies, but loved the Ewoks from Return of the Jedi. And that's why they're so good, is because of that. We originally, I don't know if I shared this on your show last time, but there was supposed to be a trilogy, the Ewok movies.
Signed on for 3 pictures.
That's right. I don't know if I shared this to you, but there actually was a script written for the 3rd Ewok movie. It actually got to the stage where one script was written. Someone needs to find it there at Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
So you never saw it?
I never saw it, but I know it was written. Yeah. But
wow.
I think
that
they
complete the trilogy.
Yeah, that would be good. It's there somewhere. So if and they have it, so they know this. But originally, it was supposed to be a trilogy. It was originally they thought. I guess he thought everybody was going to be involved. But I also have learned since since I've spoken to you that, and I was talking to some other people that the fate of Mace and the family was decided like the weekend before they started the writing sessions of the second Ewok movie. Mm. George and Amanda were watching the movie Heidi, and she liked that movie. And George said, well, "Why don't we make it like Heidi and make Sindel an orphan and bring in a hermit character?" So that it was actually that happened just right before they started the writing sessions. And if they hadn't seen that movie, and that's also how the Wheat Brothers got the job. George had seen one of their movies that they did, so he wanted to hire and wanted to work with them. So
yeah, those family wipe them out. That's the first thing I want done.
Yeah. George is spontaneous like that. It seems like when we've heard stories that he can sometimes be very easily and spontaneously motivated to make kind of a big decision very quickly. But you know, one of the things that really struck me, Eric, in watching this is, you know, as a kid, I remember very vividly these coming on because, oh my God, it was new Star Wars. It was
right.
So monumental. But I was a little thrown off because it was like, well, where are my heroes? Where's Luke? Where's Leia? And
right.
In this new era of Star Wars, we're talking about Mandalorian, where we're now, as fans, very used to Star Wars stories that don't involve the core characters. And I'm watching these movies today, and I'm like, they just seem to fit into the universe a little bit better for me as a fan because of the fact that we're more accustomed to maybe different takes visually of Star Wars. And some of it is extraordinarily, I think, tied in. The sound effects, you know, the sound effects of the blasters. There's a couple of, you know, music cues here and there that are very evocative of, you know, original vintage Star Wars, which, by the way, did you know you're vintage now, according to Disney Plus? That's the banner.
Well, that's great. I mean, I've always said they were part of Star Wars. How can they not be part of Star Wars if Lucasfilm made them? That doesn't make any sense. That whole canon, is this canon? Well, Lucasfilm, I don't know if this had happened before. I don't know how long ago I was on, but I forgot to say this because we were arguing about that canon thing. Is it expanded universe? Mm. Well, I mean, the last release before this was Star Wars Ewok Adventures. It actually, on the DVD, it says Star Wars Ewok Adventures. Why would you put the Star Wars logo on it if it's not canon? So
there you go.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go. It's the mic drop moment for Aaron Walker right there on the canon situation.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, there has been some argument about where it falls on the timeline. Now, we've heard it happens anywhere from like a year prior to Return of the Jedi to a year after Return of the Jedi to 150 years after Return of the Jedi.
Well, I mean, what happened was a gentleman who wrote a really good book and put Sindel in it, right?
Yeah.
And he moved the timeline. He did, period. I mean, there's proof that he moved the timeline. And there's actually, if anybody remembers Bantha Trax, do you remember Bantha Trax?
Oh, sure. Of course.
Tom Smith talks about it in Bantha Trax and says that it's after Return of the Jedi. So there you go. He actually says
that. I mean, that would make sense because you have the Ewoks comprehending English so well to the point that Wicket is speaking English in the second movie.
Yes.
But I don't make a big deal about that because it's just a storytelling device. You got the little girl and the Ewok spending so much time together.
Sure.
You can't constantly have the girl translating for the Ewok or
you
subtitles.
Can.
Doesn't work for
and
kids.
People learn languages. I mean, I don't know if I was married at the time, but I speak Vietnamese. So, I mean, I learned it because my wife is Vietnamese and I wanted to be able to have better communication with her. I went to school. And I quit at third grade because the homework was just too much. I go, I can't sit here and do homework and go back to school again. So, but I tried.
Well, and I bet you blow minds because Eric, you're like the last person in the world I would expect to be speaking Vietnamese.
It does blow. And, it does. I bet it does you blow them away.
Yeah. Oh, I bet you have a lot of fun with that, don't you? Yeah.
I do. I just I let them talk. I let them talk, especially if they're insulting me. So then I could like say something.
Yeah,
back.
Yeah. Real have you run across that?
That happened one time when I was in Saigon, and I would go in the morning. I would like to go and have a walk every morning. Because I have to, I've always battled weight all my life. You know, I had surgery 4 years ago, and I look a lot better now. I've lost 175 pounds. I still have more weight to lose. It's always been a big battle for me. Thank you. It's always been a battle, and I talked about that in the book I wrote. But when I was going for my walks in the morning, this guy was sitting there talking to me and smiling and speaking Vietnamese, but he was calling me names like fat and this and lard ass and whatever, whatever. I don't want to say any bad words. Yeah, and he was smiling like I didn't know what he was talking about. And like about he did that for about a week, and then he started to do it again. And then I looked at him and I said it to him in Vietnamese. I, you know, something on the equivalent. You know, I might be fat and all, but at least I'm handsome, even though I'm fat. But you're ugly and you can't do anything about it.
I said back to him. Mic drop number two.
Right. So, Eric, when did you become aware that your character was going to be relatively short lived in the follow up? And then, what did you make of then? You know, the situation where you thought you had signed on for three films. How was that news delivered to you?
Oh, Aubrey Miller's mother, Rhonda, called my father and said, I have some bad news for Eric, so I think you should hear it first, but he's not going to be in the second Ewok movie. Everybody's been killed, and they're not even involved. So I thought I wasn't even going to be in it, period. That's what we were told. And it was very devastating. I was very upset. I mean, I think I went and listened to music and cried myself to sleep. I was very upset about it because I worked so hard in that first movie. I was on the set for days and days when no actors were there. It was just myself that I had to film scenes. And everybody had even left, and it was just me there with the crew, like when we were doing the underwater scenes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I worked hard on that movie. I had a weight issue, and I was a chubby kid. I had to lose 30 pounds to do the role of Mace, and they asked me to lose 35. I lost 30 pounds to do the role.
And wow. You look great in that movie. And there were quite a few stunts. Did you have a stunt double for the film?
They did. We did use a stunt double only one time. I did all the stunts, and they actually hired a trainer. His name was Bob Yerkes, and he used to train all the Circus of the Star trainers. So he trained me, and we did all kinds of stuff. And when Mace flies into the Gorak's cage, they did a shot, and they didn't end up using most of it, but I flew 15 feet up in the air like I was going at it, but they did not want me to do it where he crashes into the cage. That was the only time we had a stunt double, and it was the stunt coordinator, Mike Cassidy, who did that at that time. He actually did Mace, and you only see him for a second when Mace crashes into the cage. But other than that, it's me doing every stunt, the underwater scenes, everything. Mike kind of joked and said, I'm going to give you hazard pay, you know, and he gave me a hat that said Stuntman's Association on it. And I was proud of that fact. Again, I worked very hard.
Yeah.
I worked very hard in that movie. And, a lot of things happen, even doing the dubbing on that movie. I watch it now and the dubbing doesn't bother me, but for 10 years, I couldn't watch a movie after I did the Ewok movie, because I could see when everybody did their ADR, their looping, I could see when their mouths didn't match. And it ruined my movie-going experience for 10 years having to do looping. Now I look at it, it looks pretty good, so I'm
happy. Hey, guys, hate to do this. I'm going to have to take a pause. I'm having some technical difficulties. This is something I've not seen before, so we're going to have to reconnect.
Okay. Sorry, Eric. We appreciate your patience here, man.
Yeah, you got it, guys. Not a problem.
We will be back in just a moment.
found the computer outlet, sir.
Get full access to RFR only on Patreon. Become a member of the RFR Patreon community to get more Rebel Force Radio. Bonus shows and content are available right now only at patreon.com/Rebel Force Radio. Exclusive programming like RFR Q&A featuring you as the show host, plus early access to RFR events, exclusive updates, giveaways, and more. Become a member of the RFR Patreon community to get it all, and your contributions will help keep RFR alive for years to come. It all happens at patreon.com/Rebel Force Radio. Don't wait. Visit Patreon today to get all access to RFR. Patreon.com/Rebel Force Radio.
All right, I think we're back up.
All right, well, I'll tell E-Dog.
Actually, Eric's he's with us.
All right.
We got him back.
E-Dog.
Got me. Nobody, hey, what's up?
Nobody calls you E-Dog, do they?
No, I mean, they used to call me Ewok.
Yeah, well.
When I was a kid.
See, that makes sense. Now, you know, let's talk about that a little bit.
Actually, people call me OM a lot now because of you guys.
Nice. Nice. Yes. That was, I think
I like that a lot better, actually.
The OM. The yeah. OM. So, you know, Eric, let's talk a little bit about kids and Ewoks, because you and me, we're the same age. And for a kid of a certain age in 1983, for some of us, the Ewoks didn't really digest very well. We didn't.
That's true.
You know, people were like, oh, my God, the teddy bears, the cuteness factor.
Right.
This is a big battle against the Empire. I love the broader themes of it, though. The right. little guy taking down the big industrial oppressive government with, you know, primitive methods. I love that
right.
stuff. But for us kids who were like 12, 13, 14, we were getting ready to go into high school, and it seemed too cutesy for a lot of kids. Did you get any fallout from that?
Well, I mean, not too much because, you know, I'm the actor in the piece, so they're not going to be rude to me directly. But I did see some of what you're talking about later. And I didn't experience any of it directly, but I could see what you're saying, and I agree. They are kind of cutesy.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of like lovable teddy bears. But when I think of the fact, when I think that these were made for little kids, and I think of them as children's movies, and realize what they were made for, and Amanda Lucas was 4 or 5, the same age as Aubrey.
Mm-hmm.
So kids that are at a very young age, and of course, my sister, I call her the baby maker, she had 8 children.
Whoa.
So,
8 is enough.
And 8 is enough. Yeah, we had that in our household. And so they all loved the movies.
Mm.
And their kids, she has 18 grandchildren. So it's like they all love the Ewok movies as well.
Well, that's great.
Well, I get the point of view, though, of that. And George got a lot of flap with Jar Jar Binks being the way he was as well.
Yeah. And it's a very similar situation where I think Lucas was trying to appease his youngest kid, his son Jet, who was a little kid when he was making the prequels. And so I think a lot of the decisions he made, very similar to the Ewok movies, were being inspired by his kids.
Sure, and the kid in him as well. I mean, at heart, we're all children. We're all kids, right,
yeah.
to some degree, you know. And we want to remember what it was like to be a kid, and we remember fondly whatever adventures we had as children. If we played, I hear stories from, and this is what touches my heart so much about being a part of the Star Wars franchise. I get contacted all the time about fathers talking about how when they were kids, they used to play Sindel and Mace and in the backyard and pretend he would pretend their brother and sister would pretend they were Sindel and Mace. And then he would share with me how as adults, their kids are doing the same thing. And that's like, that's a great story. And one of the things, his proud moment came when his son, this gentleman who shared this with me, his name is Derek, longtime fan of mine. And he shared with me his proud moment as a father came when his son was playing with his cousins and they were trying to decide which character they wanted to be, and his son picked to be Mace instead of Luke Skywalker. And I go, what?
Well, you know, there are some.
I'd rather be Luke.
There are. I was noticing in watching the movie again today that there's some Luke vibes with the character of Mace. First of all, in the first film, he's wearing the orange flight suit.
Yes,
very comparable to the flight suit.
That's X-wing. That's X-wing fashion.
Yeah, for sure.
It was. It was.
It was an actual flight suit, right, from the films?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
So okay, so it was actually. It wasn't just inspired by it. That's actually what it was.
Yeah. That's what it was.
The classic orange X-wing flight suit.
And the hair, which I know was indicative of the time, but also had that sort of Luke farm boy look, you know, boy next door kind of thing. Did you have that in your head at all when you were playing the role? Were you approaching it like, well, should I borrow a little from this character, a little from that character? How did the classic trilogy films? How did that inspire your performance and how you started playing, or how you played the character?
Well, I'm certain that I thought about Luke a little bit when I was playing the character, and I think that I probably got chosen because I looked a lot like Mark. In fact, the first week we filmed, I might have shared this as well, and the last time I was on, everybody said was calling me Mark the first week until I turned around. And even Warwick Davis's mother, Kim, not Kim as a sister, but Warwick Davis's mother, Sue Davis, said, "What is Mark doing here?" And then when I turned around, she saw, and she told me she thought it was Mark. I was Mark at first. So, I mean, sure, I'm sure that had something to do with it. But of course, as an actor, Mace, to me, he was a typical, the Tawani family was from Coruscant. He was, of course, Luke Skywalker was one of his heroes, so he wanted to emulate him as well. Since this was we were told this was after Return of the Jedi and after the fall of the Empire, I didn't use too much of Luke, but I also thought he was a little bit more like Han Solo to me. He had a cockiness like Han Solo.
Very headstrong.
More so than Luke, because he doesn't have very much, Mace didn't have any force abilities. He was more like a Han Solo to me in portraying Mace.
I don't know. I think he might have had emerging force abilities and just maybe. Under the proper tutelage of maybe
you never know.
Maybe Teek could have trained him in the ways of the Force. Because I think Teek was tapping into something, the way that thing sped around the forest moon. Hey, what was it like shooting that sequence, terrifying sequence, when you're trapped underwater? What was that like? Did they just put you in a pool and throw a piece of clear plexiglass over you?
You hit it. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. That was shot the last day of filming. We were actually in only with myself, and they had some little kids do, because you couldn't really see the Ewoks from that point of view through the water. So they used kids, and they wrapped everybody. I was the only one on the set except for some extras that played Wicket and everybody else. And I think George directed that scene where I was under the water, in fact. And what they did was pretty close to Skywalker Ranch. They rented somebody's pool. And they got this really big piece of, it was really thick plexiglass. Mm-hmm. It was really thick. It must have been 6 inches thick. So I had to swim underneath it, catch my breath, and then swim underneath it, and then they said, just stay under the water as long as you can, you know. And they had the people operating the cameras, they had them up above the scene looking at me through the plexiglass, and they also had divers. So they had two divers, that had an underwater camera, because that's where they also did underwater shots as well, so.
You know, they didn't get your stunt double to do that.
No, he does his own stunts. This is OM.
I did.
In that case,
yeah.
I'd have to have a stuntman doing all my swimming stunts.
The ADR work for that. They had to bring in water in a tub, and I had to like gargle.
Might as well have you dive in for apples. Make it worth your while.
Yeah.
Hey, you can see the budget restrictions come into play
when Mace is reaching down and he touches the water and disappears, yet you still see his reflection in the water. They couldn't have just shot an empty plate with nothing there. They actually took the time to remove you. It would have just been easier to shoot it. You know, you're there. Don't move the camera and then walk away and then you're gone. But they actually erased you out. They actually erased you out.
They could have locked.
And they left the reflection. I love that. I love that.
I saw, there's lots of little things like the spiders. You could see the strings. And I was really hoping that they would have got rid of them. Aww. I was saying, oh, please, Disney Plus, get rid of those strings. First, I thought they did because I was watching it on my phone. But when I saw it on the bigger one, I saw, oh, the strings are still there.
Well, webs.
You know, there you go. Yes, that's it. That's it. Because I think that there's something about rewriting history when they go in and they, you know, just because the technology allows for, you know, some of these mistakes that really weren't mistakes at their time. They were just part of the filmmaking process. I don't know how I feel about it. I'm inclined to not like it because it's just like if you look at the original Harryhausen stuff, you can do so much more with special effects, but that doesn't mean that you go back and fix King Kong, you know, just because you can.
Right. So you're the type that would like to see the original trilogy, not the special editions type of guy.
I like to have options. I'd put it that way. I would like to be able to choose when I load my disc into the player or log on to Disney Plus. I would like to have the option of seeing the original theatrical. I love when they clean up the picture. Mm-hmm. I love when they do that.
Yes.
It's when they, you know, tweak the special effects a little bit. But I think they did a great job, you know, largely intact and incredible transfer in the films. You know, as I say, they look beautiful. You know, you running around, I'm just thinking of what it would be like to be you running around with a blaster, you know, protecting, you know, your little sister. And within the Star Wars universe, I mean, there had to have been, you know, at the time, I don't think we were using terms like fanboy back in, you know, 1984, but there had to be some at least internal, you know, freak out moments for you. When did it sort of just dawn on you, or maybe it was there from the beginning that, wow, man, I'm in Star Wars?
The first time, the night after I got the very night after I was told I got the role. I went to acting class and I told everybody I got my first starring role in a film and it's George Lucas and it's going to be like part of the next Star Wars. But then even after that, after class, I was sitting and talking with a really close friend of mine who is the agent's daughter. And she was pinching me and said, "Are you pinching yourself yet?" And I go, "I know, I keep pinching, but I can't believe I'm going to be a part in something that's part of Star Wars. Let me wake up." Yeah, there was definitely those type of moments. And then after that, it was about being a serious actor and, of course, getting in that outfit that they made for me and all those gadgets. And Mace had great accessories. He would be a great action figure.
Yeah.
Mace had his own fire starter when he started the fire.
Yeah.
He had the knife, which he hit that on his belt, which he hit the killed one of the spiders. So he had a knife. He had a blaster. Mace had it going on.
He had
a lot of accessories.
Don't forget the rock. The rock you split in half, and it has the magic arrowhead in it.
And the axe too. He had an axe that he had as well.
He did. Yeah, he took it from the dead Ewok. How surprising they killed off the Ewok there, and you then had an emotional scene at the death. It was just I get goosebumps thinking about it.
Kevin Thompson, who played Chukatrox, he was kind enough to meet with me and rehearse the scene the night before. All the Ewok actors, very professional actors.
Oh, of course.
I get asked all the time, you know, is it difficult to work with people in costumes that have masks on? No, it's not. It's actually easier because they're very professional in what they do. They're very, very good at what they do, and they're more they're very professional, all of them. And that
George Lucas said he would never let an Ewok die ever again, because when that happened with Chukotroc dying, it made Amanda Lucas cry.
Oh, it made me cry.
And it really upset George when that happened, and his daughter was crying. So he made a promise, but instead, let's kill the whole family, not an Ewok in the second movie.
Teddy bears are one thing, but the Tawani family, wipe them out, all of them.
Hey,
Eric, we do a thing on here. It's a little questionnaire that was supplied to us by Jedi Master Yoda. And they're just pretty straightforward questions about Star Wars and your preferences. This is not a quiz necessarily. This is just to take your temperature as a Star Wars fan. There are no wrong answers. You could be shamed for an answer, but that doesn't mean it's wrong.
Okay.
And I think right. Jason has them ready. This is the Yoda questionnaire.
Maybe I should.
The Yoda questionnaire.
Thank you, Richard Cheese, for that Yoda questionnaire intro. You ever listen to Richard Cheese, Eric? You ever hear him?
I can't say I haven't.
No, well, hey, check him out. He does all kind of crazy Star Wars swinging jazz, Sinatra.
Star Wars inspired lounge tunes.
Lounge lizard music.
Lounge singer.
Yeah. And he's he does all sort of parodies. He parodies a lot of rock music, and he'll turn them into lounge lizard croons. And he's in movies. He's everywhere. He's a friend of ours here at Rebel Force Radio. So check him out. And that was him singing the Yoda questionnaire intro. Yes. Okay, here we go.
All right, we're going to get down to it. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right.
I'm ready.
First question. What is your favorite Star Wars word?
What?
This would be a word that mainly associated with Star. I can't say that it's just exclusively a Star Wars word, but...
Well, I mean, I'm going to always do this as like a stream of consciousness. So the first thing that popped into my mind was Force.
Yeah, for me, it was Jedi. It was Jedi. Jason's never asked this question before. In all of our years of doing the Yoda questionnaire, Yoda must have sent you some updates.
Oh, no, it's the Yoda questionnaire is a lot longer than you think. This is one of them. This is one of them. Wow. I promise. It's on, it's towards the bottom
it's
of
new
the list.
To me.
But it's on the list.
Is it canon? List. I don't know.
All right. Who or what? We want to be very inclusive here, Eric. Who or what? There are a lot of what's in Star Wars. Who or what is your favorite Star Wars character?
Favorite Luke Skywalker. Character.
Yeah, Luke.
There we go.
Luke.
Represent.
That's a good call.
All right. All right. We've dabbled on the light side of the Force. We're going to go to the dark side here with a couple of questions. Who or what is your least favorite Star Wars character? Your least favorite?
Well, I mean, I don't want to do this, but probably...
Oh, you worried me there for a minute. You held up Baby Yoda for our viewers.
No, Grogu is trying to help me use the Force.
Oh, okay. I see. But, he's assisting you.
Yeah, he's assisting me, yeah. I'm going to say Jar Jar Binks.
Well,
interesting.
Easy pickings. Yeah. That's, you know,
it's
lots of people.
Too easy. You're right.
Said that. You know, it's so funny. A lot of RFR listeners have been sending me pictures of what they see going on in stores when they go out searching for action figures or Star Wars memorabilia and going to your big box store like Walmart. And it's just miles and miles of Jar Jar Binks Black Series action figures. When is Hasbro ever going to learn? Yeah. When are they ever going to learn? We need more Baby Yoda and Mandalorian stuff. And come on, how many times?
I have to say though that some of the accessories were really cool that came with Jar Jar Binks.
I love it. I love the blast shield
The blast shield. Yes,
and he's got the scepter with Boomba on the top.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I did an unboxing with Jar Jar Binks, actually, as well. So.
Wow. Your least favorite.
Is that all on the All of Sci-Fi? All for Sci-Fi?
It's on the All for Sci-Fi on the YouTube page, All for Sci-Fi.
Okay, excellent. So you want to see that unboxing with the OM.
Yeah.
on the Jar Jar Binks figure. All right. Let's see. I'm going to take a look here. I'm trying to mix it up a little bit. Going back into the Wayback Machine of the Yoda questionnaire. We've got the classics. Here we go. What Star Wars moment makes you smile or laugh? It just puts you in the
first. The first real Star Wars moment that made me smile and kind of gave me goosebumps was at the end of Return of the Jedi when we see Anakin Skywalker and all the Force ghosts come up when Luke looks at him. That made me smile, and it like gave me, you know, goosebumps when I saw that the first time.
Yes.
It's an uplifting moment.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. What Star Wars moment makes you sad?
The way I saw Anakin treat Padme, and when she talked about how he was breaking her heart, that really upset me.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I think you're not the world's biggest prequel fan. Have you come around on that at all?
I think that they're good. I think that they're a lot better than people give them credit for. They're definitely more entertaining than most of the stuff that's out there. That's for sure. It's still Star Wars. There's things I don't like about the prequels. It's just there's just too much there. And that's because George is a genius, and he just tries to cram too much stuff in there, and it's overload. He's such a genius. And it's missing that element that the original trilogy had, which I think had a lot to do with Marshall Lucas. And that's not a popular opinion. But I think that the editing of Marshall Lucas, which he won an Academy Award for, by the way, I think that had a lot to do with why the original trilogy was the way it was.
Maybe she was able to rein George's vision in a little bit and perhaps give it
some clarity. That's just what he needs. I mean, not really to tell him what to do.
The man is a genius. Yeah. And actors say, you could write it, George. You know, the famous Carrie Fisher. Sure. You could write it, George, but can you say it? You know? And it's still great, but I don't like the backlash that people give George over those prequels. I really don't like it. And I don't like the backlash that people, and this may not be popular, and I don't care, but I don't like the way they treat Kathleen Kennedy. Because I think Kathleen Kennedy is doing the best job she could do. Brilliant producer, and people have hits and misses, but because we're such big Star Wars fans, we think it's not okay. And there's always going to be hit and misses. Nobody can hit a home. It's like, you know, when people go up to bat, can they hit a home run every time they go up to bat? Can Tom Brady throw the winning touchdown every single time? You know, it's just, I thank Kathleen Kennedy because she's helping keep Star Wars alive. So.
Well, you know, with the Ewok films and you know, unlocking some of this older content, Star Wars content, it's a step in the right direction, you know?
It is.
And I bristle a little bit at the vintage moniker. You know, I feel like they're trying to draw a line in the sand, like, you old people go over here and enjoy your vintage stuff. Yeah. We're going to be over here enjoying the, true. You know, I think that's you could true. Substitute that word vintage for real.
Oh, stop.
Real Star Wars.
It's just nice. Star Wars. It's nice to have a place you can go.
It's like the total opposite. At one point, they were calling them Legends or something like that, too.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, the expanded universe. Yeah.
I prefer vintage to Legends.
I do, too.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll tell you why. It's because of something that Mickey Rooney once told me right to my face. I called him a legend. Really? Yes, I worked with Mickey Rooney in radio. And this was in the 90s. He was in Chicago in The Wizard of Oz with
he was playing the wizard on tour.
Yes, yes.
He was in The Wizard of Oz as the wizard.
Right. And that was just right down the street from our radio station. And he liked to come over and horse around sometimes on the air. Mm-hmm. He said to me,
I have a tickle in my throat, so this might actually help me with the Mickey Rooney impersonation you're about ready to be bedazzled okay. with.
Great.
But Mickey, I said, Mick, it's such a pleasure to meet you. You're a living legend. And he goes, stop it right there. A legend? And he looks back and forth. He's like, a legend is a guy looking for a job. And I think he paused because he thought then, like, the studio audience would all start applauding. And there was no studio right. audience. It was just me there with him. Mick wasn't exactly feet on the ground kind of guy, if you know what I mean. But that's what he said about legend.
I worked with Mickey Rooney, too. I was in Little Spies with Mickey Rooney.
Wow.
I don't know if you knew that. So I have a connection with him. And that I did that in 80, let's say it was 85 or 86. I was in Little Spies. So I actually worked for Disney after working for Lucasfilm.
Wow.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever talked about your career outside of the Ewok films. But, I mean, Mickey Rooney, right? Like out of his mind, you know, like all the time. He's like always
writers,
on.
The writers hated him.
Oh, I'll bet.
And the writers hated him, yeah, because he would never stick to the script.
No, he's not going to say anything you tell him. Oh, man.
True.
All right, back to the Yoda questionnaire.
Back to the questionnaire. Okay. All right.
Sorry
all right.
About that.
No, it's all right. That's good stuff. Okay. Got one final question for you here, Eric. This is the granddaddy of them all. Though you actually kind of know what you've got firsthand experience with this. Most of the people we ask have never had this opportunity. But let's see what happens. All right. Okay. So there's another Star Wars movie being made. Imagine that. Uh-huh. And you are cast in it. And George Lucas is the director. New Star Wars movie starring you, directed by George Lucas. You finally get to the end of the shoot. What would you like to hear George say to you after he says cut on your final scene?
Job well done.
There you go.
There you go, kid.
I can hear George saying that. Job well done.
Now, did George ever actually say that to you? Did he ever comment to you? Because I know he directed you. Did he ever make any sort of commentary to you, like, "Ah, you're doing a good job"?
He did. He did. Visiting a set, because he visited the set about once a week, and we had just a day or two before we had just filmed the scene where Mace and Sindel take off from the Ewoks, and he stops and builds a fire, and he's trying to. Because Sindel's tired and he's trying to confront her and talk about how he wish he was a better son. And George said he liked that my work in that scene. Wow. He said, you did a really good job and he liked my work in that scene. And he also liked another scene I did too with Izzarina right at the end of the Ewok movies. He liked that as well. The original ending of the Ewok movies was changed. It was supposed to be at the end of the movie. Mace was supposed to, as the party was going on, Mace was supposed to walk outside. And the ending scene of the movie was with him and the Queen Izzarina. And then he lets her go and it ends. And you could almost see it because if you look real close and freeze, replay it a couple times. When he turns and looks, you start to see snow falling. You start to see one or two drops of snow. The original ending was... after he turns and looks up, it starts snowing, and Wicket and Sindel come out, and they dance in the snow at the end of the movie. That was the original ending of the Ewok movie.
Oh, I like that. Nice. Yeah. That would have been nice. That would have been nice.
They was supposed to come out. It was supposed to be released closer to Christmas, though. That's why they did that. So
marketing.
But then they moved it. Yep.
You know, something that I noticed as I was watching the Battle for Endor is that your father is played by Paul Gleason.
Oh yeah.
Who is, you know, I mean, an iconic character actor from the 80s. Everything, of course, from The Breakfast Club to Trading Places, and always played that guy, you know,
Die Hard.
Yeah. Yeah, right, of course.
But that came after, I think, because he did the Ewok thing in 85. So
So just curious if you have any memories of him on set, and did he live up to his on-screen persona as being a tough guy and someone that always had a, you know, choice word?
He was very nice to me as a son. He was I took some pictures with him. I got to meet him. And also, Wilford Brimley was very nice.
Wow. He's
well.
A legend. Yeah.
He actually invited me to even visit him and meet him because we didn't have any scenes together.
Oh.
That was nice. And I have pictures of with myself and Wilford as well, which he granted me to take a picture with him. It might be up on my Facebook or on my website. I have to check. But yeah, it was always a great experience. I know, you know, other people didn't have a great experience on the Battlefinder, but that could take up another whole show about Wilford Brimley. So,
oh, gee, wow. Yeah. I didn't know about that.
Yeah. You just want to have a bowl of oatmeal with the guy.
Yeah, I know you do.
I mean,
he was nice to us, but he didn't like the fact that originally Teek was not supposed to be like closer to like Yoda.
Mm.
So Teek was supposed to be like a puppet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a puppet and he didn't like it. He goes, "I don't want to act with no puppet." So he didn't like
Well, you know, he joins an illustrious line of actors in Star Wars that didn't really like working alongside puppets. Alec Guinness was known to also not be too fond of the puppet getting the better lines and things like that.
And because of it, Nicky Botello got the role of Teek because of him. So he actually helped another actor because Nicky was just doing the stunt work for Wicket because she's short like Warwick.
Mm-hmm.
So she got a great role and she did a great job. So it helped her. Which is awesome.
That is great. Hey, what about if George said to you after he approached you on the set and he says, doing a good job, kid, and pass along your name to Marty Scorsese and he's going to do Taxi Driver the Next Generation. Wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be amazing.
I have a vivid imagination. Well.
You do. At that time, he was dating Linda Ronstadt. So,
whoa.
Oh, yeah. Did she ever show up on the set?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She showed up with George.
Do you recall ever talking to her?
I did. She was just the sweetest person.
Amazing.
And I couldn't believe, you know, because I had met her on the set. And then later she was at the wrap party with George. And she came up and gave me a hug and said, "Eric, you did such a great job." I'm thinking, Linda Ronstadt knows who I am? What the heck's going on?
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
Voice of an Angel, that one. Something I had forgotten that I remembered when rewatching this movie was the narration by Burl Ives and how it conjures up those classic Rankin Bass Christmas specials.
Yeah,
because it's almost the same kind of delivery. And then you talk about, you know, the original ending was Dancing in the Snow, and that release schedule was supposed to be around the holidays. I wonder if that had something to do with the Burl Ives narration.
I don't know. I think it was because I'm trying to remember the original script. I don't think there was any narration in the original script. So I think all that was added later. So
maybe they felt that we as the audience needed a little, it's odd, you know, I mean,
things. If you listen to what they're saying, a lot of times he's trying to explain things.
Right.
You know, like, so I think that's why they wanted to help. You got it, Jason. They wanted to help guide us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't say enough about the fact that watching this in 2021 on Disney Plus with it all cleaned up visually, which is great. But after seeing, you know, Mandalorian, and I don't want people to say, "Oh, you're comparing it to Mandalorian." I'm not. My point is that our palette for Star Wars visual storytelling is so much larger than it was back in 1984 that it fits. It just kind of starts fitting in a little better for me as a fan. I think I have a far different appreciation for it now than I did when it was like, well, it's not Star Wars if Luke Skywalker's not in it. And that's, you know, that was seven, eight-year-old me at the time. And now having, you know, experienced so much more Star Wars, you know, my palate is a lot broader for it.
Well, the Ewok movies, Caravan of Courage and Battle for Endor are the first Star Wars stories. So...
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, right. Yes, depending on the timeline.
Even though they said The Mandalorian was, that's not true. So, but I love The Mandalorian. It's just a wonderfully made piece of filmmaking, and those actors
they have it all. They're lucky. We had to sit there with a blue screen and pretend everything was there. There, they're like, can you imagine being an actor on the set now? It's like so easy to get into a scene because you really feel like you're on that planet with that new digital technology. It's like you're really there on those worlds, which is just awesome for an actor.
Well, Eric, I would love to see them find something, some way to bring you and her name's just popped out of my head.
Aubrey Miller.
Yes. Maybe back into the Star Wars universe. I'd love to see an Eric Walker, an OM cameo. Not as the same character, obviously, but you know, maybe you could be sitting at a cantina in The Mandalorian or something like that.
That would be awesome. I would be down for it.
No, I want to see Mace. I want to see the orange flight suit and the vest. I want all of it. I want the bracelet.
Yeah.
I want the rock that splits in half with the arrowhead inside it. I want the whole
Speaking
thing.
Speaking of that, since you brought up Mace, we didn't talk about this, but because the Ewok movies just got released on Disney Plus, I released a new song because called Dare to Dream in a Galaxy Far, Far Away.
Wow.
So have all your people check that out.
All right, yeah. Where should they go?
Because I play Mace. It's on my social media page. Go to EricWalkerMusic.com or go to YouTube/EricWalkerMusic. And there's a music video. It's a great tune. I think you guys are going to love it.
So, oh, awesome.
And I dress up as Mace, and we even have a scene where we recreate the stupid rock, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. How did we not know this?
We did not. You didn't send us the press release on this, Eric. Well,
we had it all queued up, ready to go, man.
You're full of surprises, and it's great to see that you're so active and you're recording. You're putting your sci-fi thoughts out there online, and you're really staying connected to the Star Wars audience, and I think that's just great. And I'd love to have you back for a Mandalorian after show or something like that.
That'd be great.
That fires up again. So it's just been a pleasure to reconnect and get caught up with you. And you're just a great guy. I really appreciate your generosity with your time, and I recommend everyone listening to visit your website and check out everything you have to offer there.
I appreciate it, guys. You guys are great guys, too. We'll catch up, hopefully, at the next celebration.
So. There you go.
Yes.
Stay safe. Wear your mask. I have my Grogu mask.
Nice.
All right, man. Well, thank you very much, and always good to talk to you, and we will catch up again soon. Eric Walker, thanks, everybody.
Yay.
Thank
OM.
You.
Thank you.
Rebel Force Radio. Rebel Force Radio. Rebel Force Radio.
Force Radio.
You've already made that Star Wars reference.
I'm excited about
your
this one.
Source to the Force.
Star Wars like parody.
All right.
SpongeBob SquarePants is it is just constantly heard in our house. We watch it, SpongeBob, all the time.
Yeah.
Went to New York to see the Broadway musical. My son falls asleep every night almost to SpongeBob playing on his iPad, except when The Mandalorian after show is running, and then he falls asleep to that. But no, true story, he really does. But SpongeBob. So I'm excited. I haven't seen. I'm trying to think. I don't think I've ever seen a SpongeBob Star Wars crossover in terms of Star Wars and pop culture.
No. The only real crossover we've seen is Tom Kenny provided a voice.
That's right.
To Newt Gunray, of all characters in the Clone Wars.
Right.
Yeah. And that was just one and done because Newt Gunray, not in that episode after, not in any episode after that one.
Right.
But thanks to Michael Mack for tipping me off to this. SpongeBob SquarePants voice actors Tom Kenny and Bill Fagerbakke. He's Patrick.
Also known as Dobber from the old sitcom Coach.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And And so he's Patrick the Starfish. And I guess just maybe because they were bored, or I don't know. This pandemic
I haven't seen
is driving.
This or heard this.
Pandemic's driving everyone crazy. And so these guys are sitting at home and they're like, hey, let's take that iconic dialogue from the Anakin Obi-Wan saber duel at the end of Revenge of the Sith and put a SpongeBob SquarePants twist on it. And that's what they did. So I thought, Jason, you'd love this, wrapping up RFR this week with SpongeBob and Patrick Starr duking it out on Mustafar.
It's over, Anakin. I have the high ground.
You underestimate my power.
Don't try it.
Ow!
What the? And that's why we don't play in lava.
Ow! Hey!
You were the chosen one. It was said you would destroy the Sith, not join them. Bring balance to the Force, not leave it in darkness.
Ow! I hate you!
Oh, love it.
That's going to wrap things up for us this week on Rebel Force Radio. And you know what? There's still stuff left, stuff that we didn't get to. That's why you've got us here each and every week to deliver the best in Star Wars news, interviews, commentary, and so much more. Speaking of so much more, if you'd like to have more Rebel Force Radio in your life, you can do so at Patreon. Go over to RebelForceRadio.com and click on that Patreon banner and subscribe. Become a supporter today if you haven't done so. If you have done so, we appreciate it very, very much. There are exclusive podcasts there that you won't find anywhere else, in addition to remastered episodes of classics like Star Wars Clone Wars Declassified and Star Wars Oxygen, etc. There's so much going on there, so check it out. RebelForceRadio.com. And click on the Patreon banner. If you'd like to play with us in between shows, we'd love to hear from you. We love your voicemails, your emails. The email address is show@rebelforceradio.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 708-320-1737, or just email us one of those voice memos that you can do on your smartphone. You can follow us on our social media channels, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And on Facebook, we've got an official Rebel Force Radio group, which is great, just to answer a few questions and just prove that you are a Rebel Force Radio listener, and you can join us today. And there's just all kinds of great conversation about Star Wars, and, you know, we keep all of the craziness out of the conversation, and it's just fun, and it's all Star Wars. And every once in a while, Jimmy Mac has to lay down the hammer.
Yeah, I don't like doing
every
it.
Every once in a while.
I don't like doing it, but for the most part, everyone is awesome. I mean, everyone's awesome and honest too, you know. I'm not going to slap you on the wrist for just voicing your opinion about something. We encourage that. So I think that's important, because I think there are too many forums out there in Star Wars fandom where open discussion is not encouraged. And there's right. too many heavy-handed mods and thought police and shills shutting things down. I think we have real conversation, real fandom conversations at the official RFR Facebook group, and I encourage that. Just treat each other with love and respect and open-mindedness. That's may the Absolutely. Force be with us all. Yeah.
Totally. Totally. So check it out. The Rebel Force Radio Facebook group. Great. Great place to hang out and talk Star Wars. Don't forget about the official website, of course, the aforementioned RebelForceRadio.com. And if you can, we'd love to have you subscribe to Rebel Force Radio Podcast. You can do so on iTunes. You can do so on Apple Podcasts, your podcatcher of choice. And if you're able to, leave us a review. Those reviews help us, jump us up in the ratings and attract other fans, other subscribers. Just run rule, please, on
those reviews. Make them good.
And you can find us streaming online just about everywhere. We're at WGN Plus. We're at Jedi News, YouTube. YouTube is so much fun for us. It's the it's our chosen platform where we want to go live with things like the Mandalorian After Show. Who knows? There could be a Bad Batch After Show coming. We don't know. We'll see what happens with that. So that's a great way to know that we're going live and taking your phone calls. So that's all at youtube.com/Rebel Force Radio. The link, of course, at rebelforceradio.com. We're on iHeart, TuneIn, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, radio.com, anywhere you can find podcasts. One of the things that's so fun about working here at Rebel Force Radio is that when there's a new channel, a new door open for podcasts, we're usually one of the first shows right through the door.
Ooh.
It's really great.
We're in a new place now. Samsung.
Oh,
Samsung. What? Yeah, this is all new. Yeah, very exciting stuff. Samsung is now hosting podcasts, and Rebel Force Radio was asked to be among their charter shows. So wow. we're always very happy and grateful when things like that happen. And if you use a Samsung as your choice for finding podcasts, then you want to look
You'll
us
find
up.
Us here.
Yeah, find us. Yeah.
Rebel Force Radio. Samsung, a great manufacturer of mobile devices. Yeah, check us out. All right, we'll see you next time. Lots of fun. Big thanks to Eric Walker, our guest in the cantina. Make sure if you haven't had a chance to fire up your Disney Plus app and check out the two Ewok Adventure films, as well as the whole collection of Star Wars vintage, including the Ewoks animated series and the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars series. Boy, does that... It just looks beautiful. They've really... Hats off to Disney, truly, for taking the time and remastering some of this content and making it look so appropriate for today's audiences. Really, really fun stuff. Great nostalgia trips. That's it for us. We'll see you next time. For Rebel Force Radio, I'm Jason.
I'm Jimmy Mack.
And remember,
the Force will be with you always.
Woo!
It was cuddly and comfortable and friendly, you know?